Hi, I'm back. Sorry I let that thing run out. I wasn't very close, and it just all of a sudden I was out of tape. Anyway, as I was saying, we were pretty successful, or we have been in this operation. We've had some rather bad weather the last two or three days. The thunderstorms have gotten very large and have put so much rain into the area that it's been hard to provide close air support. And in a couple of cases, the guys got in a pretty much of a bind in the mountains. One company got surrounded by Charlie, and we had a hard time bailing him out. Another FAC and myself were working in the area, and it was pretty tight. We had a ceiling of about 2,500 feet. It was kind of a broken deck of clouds. There were a few holes in it, and the fighters were having to come down through these holes and then line up on final, and we try and direct them in. And we were working within about 100 meters of the friendlies. And when you start working with 500-pound bombs that close, and napalm, that close to friendlies, you've got to absolutely be right, or you're going to get the wrong guy. So it was pretty touchy, but the fighters did a good job, which certainly helped, and we were real proud of them for getting in there, and they helped save a company that afternoon from getting pretty well wiped out. We have been pretty busy here. It seems like there's no end to Charlie in this area. He's everywhere. He's got caves and tunnels, and he mixes with the people down in the valley, and you can't tell who's who. And it seems like he's always sniping at everybody. We've had several accounts of sniper fire, although none of our facts have been fired at, except we have been fired at a few times when we were running strikes, but nothing really very close or very serious, at least not that we knew about. But we have had some ground fire. A C-130 came in here to land at Duck Full about a week ago and took seven hits, and they knocked one engine out, so he had to take off again. Well, since then, they've started clearing some of these villages out around the airport, and they're just burning the whole village to the ground. So that's our way of retaliating when we start getting ground fire. And it may seem kind of cruel, but it's very effective. As a matter of fact, the stretch of road from here to the beach, what they did there, so we have so much traffic, you see, the ships come up to the beach there and unload their cargo, which includes a lot of ammunition and food and everything else that goes to support an army. And we have convoys running back and forth every day. And of course, it would be just too much trouble to try and protect all that road from sniper fire. So what they did was just got some bulldozers and just absolutely scraped clean on each side of the road for about a mile in into the jungle on each side of the road. It's not really a jungle. It's rice paddies down here in the flatland. But there is some heavy growth. And they just scraped it completely clean. It looks like they're getting ready to put in a new housing or something. Absolutely bare. And that, needless to say, eliminated any chance of Charlie getting in and sniping at us. So that's one way of dealing with the problem. However, from driving from here over to the airfield, which is about another two clicks, as I said, a click is a kilometer. I think I told you that. Well, anyway, they haven't cleaned it off, so what they have to do every morning, the first bunch through is air cavalry. They call it that's the cavalry's job, is to sweep the road. They have to take the minesweepers, and about two mornings ago, they found six mines in the road. And when they first got up here, they had two or three guys killed by mines and blew the jeeps up and everything. Lately, they've been able to catch the mines, but it shows you how sneaky Charlie really is. We have two whole brigades of soldiers, but one brigade over at Duck Full, and then, of course, the 101st here. And those two brigades, with a lot of guards out at night, are still not able to keep Charlie from slipping in there and digging holes in the road and putting mines in. So he's very elusive, and he's very smart, too. I think a lot of people, and especially people back in the States, tend to underestimate him as just kind of an illiterate boy soldier that's out there fighting in the boonies, and they don't give him a lot of credit. But believe me, these guys are really smart. They may not be smart with books, but when it comes to fighting, they know all the tricks. For instance, the other day I went in to work with a company, and I was trying to find their position, and I told them to mark their position with smoke. And just about the same time that they marked their position, why, Charlie, who also has all different colors of smoke, and he marked a position with the very same color of smoke, so that I wouldn't be able to figure out just, I thought that that's where that company was, you see, and that would screw up our planning for this airstrike. And they're just, they're constantly doing things like this. And it really keeps you jumping to try and keep ahead of. They also listen in on our radio. They have FM radio sets also, and they get on our frequencies, and we have to be very careful not to give away positions and secret data on the air, because Charlie's always listening, it seems like. We had a rather interesting incident occur here last night. No, it was two nights ago. We had just come back from dinner. It was about 18:20, I believe it was. Come walking into the TOC, which is the Tactical Operations Center, and that's where our radio is, and it's kind of the hub of all the planning for the brigade. And we're checking over some of our targets for the next day. And all of a sudden, this guy comes back from the Army section there in intelligence and says, some airplane's bombing our troops out there. Well, there we stood, and we didn't know who it was because we didn't have any fighter strikes ordered or planned to put in at that time. We did have a FAC in the area. One of our FACs, Jerry Ellington, was out there. He was working with a group called the LRPs. The LRPs are the Long Range Reconnaissance Patrols, and they are just small groups of about 8 or 10 that go out and observe the enemy. They don't engage the enemy, and they try not to ever be seen or anything. They're just trying to figure out where he's going and what his plans are. It's a real hairy operation because they're small and they're not able to defend themselves. And if they ever get caught out in the open, why, you just might as well scratch them off. Well, anyway, he was working with them on another operation, and we knew that he wasn't putting in the strike, so we tried to figure out where it was coming from. We checked up with a DASC up at Da Nang, and it come to find out that the ARVN, the Army of Vietnam, had ordered a strike, and they had mistakenly given them the wrong coordinates. And the coordinates they gave them were right in the middle of our AOR, or what we call our Air Order of Battle, Area of Responsibility, AOR, Area of Responsibility. Anyway, they had given coordinates that were in this area, and of course, just by chance, these bombs happened to be falling right by some of our friendlies. It's done by radar. These guys come along and they bomb at night. They're in a level flight, and the radar tells them when to bomb, tells them when to pickle off their bombs. It's quite effective, and it's pretty accurate, too. And it happens that this particular flight was a flight of F-4Bs out of Da Nang. Well, just luckily, the bombs didn't hurt anyone. It was very close to one of our Army platoons, but luckily it didn't hurt anyone. And about the same time, a chopper that was working with the LRPs started receiving ground fire, and another chopper that was working in the same area had lost power and had gone down. Well, the people that were in this chopper jumped out and started forming a perimeter defense to protect the chopper, and Charlie tried to jump on this opportunity to get himself a chopper and get all the radios and stuff out of it, so they started drawing fire. Well, you can imagine what that talk was like. Everybody was running around like a chicken with their head cut off, and believe me, it was pretty busy in there for a while. But we were able to get rid of Charlie. We sent in some gunships and chased him off, some helicopter gunships, and then they sent in one of the big Chinooks to haul the chopper out. Well, nothing else had gone right that day, and this was no exception. The helicopter had pulled this little helicopter up, and they were hauling him out, and they were up at about 4,000 feet, and a cable broke, and down goes the chopper in the middle of the mountain out there and just smashed it all to hell. So that was one more chopper off the list, and after all the work they'd gone to, it was a real shame. Of course, it was some of your tax dollars, too, you know. So, as per usual, there's never a dull moment around here. I must say that we're very well set up here, and this is the best area we've ever had. I'm up on the side of a sort of a little mountain here that overlooks the whole valley here, and it's really pretty here. There's a river that goes right by our area, and of course, like I said, the ocean's quite close here, and we get a nice breeze in the afternoon. And although it does get very hot and very humid, like everywhere else in Vietnam, it is quite bearable. And at night, I've got my little electric fan here, and we have generators supplying power, so I have lights and even have a telephone of my own. So I'm really in pretty good shape. I went and got some ammo boxes that they bring the 105 millimeter howitzer shells in, and these boxes make real good sandbags. What I do is fill them up with dirt and sand, and I've made a wall around my tent to protect from mortar fire. And they also make a nice floor, and I scrounged up some plywood, so I put myself in a wooden floor so I can avoid the fiasco of the mud that we had at Con Juan. I've also put up one of those Australian showers, and I sent some slides of out behind my tent. I've got a nice little tree. I hung it from that and built me a sort of a wall around the shower with some more of these ammo boxes. So I've got a nice little shower of my own now also. And I've also built a washstand where I can hang my mirror and all kinds of goodies like that also. So I'm really in good shape now. I'm really living uptown. Gee, this is fantastic. Anyway, for living in the field, it's not bad. And as always, the food's good, and so I really have no complaints. One thing has been a little bit of a problem here. We have quite a few bugs, not too many mosquitoes, but we have some kind of a funny-looking thing. It's kind of a worm with wings on it, and the wings come off real easy, and so then you end up with these worms crawling around. Well, as Mother Nature seems to take care of itself, and there's also a whole bunch of toads around here. And I never thought I'd be so glad to see toads as I have here. In fact, the toads have become my best friends. And it's kind of funny every night why I use some of that super-duper bug spray I was telling you about, and it just knocks these things right out of the sky. Boy, and they come landing on the floor by the hundreds, or even thousands some nights, and the toads come in here and just wipe them up off that floor just like a vacuum sweeper. It's the darndest thing you've ever seen. In fact, one night the bugs got so thick that they were clogging up my fan. Saying I was wanting to read. I'm in the middle of a real good novel now. So I was reading by flashlight in my bed and had the mosquito net up to keep the bugs out. And what I would do every once in a while is I'd point with my flashlight to the bugs and pick out bugs, and then the toads would follow my light around and eat them up. And it was just kind of a game, you know. They'd follow my flashlight. That may sound kind of gross to you, but let's face it, we're hard up for entertainment over here. We'll do anything to stay amused. Anyway, I've enjoyed the toads, and I hope they stick around and help me out. The way we're set up here now, we have one airplane up at Chulai, which our headshed people at Task Force Oregon are using, and then we keep one FAC over there. So about every third or fourth week, I'll be rotating up to Chulai to fly the airplane up there. And just live up there 1 week at a time, about every third or fourth week. It'll be a welcome break from the routine down here. And of course, it is fairly nice up there, as I told you earlier. We have some of the niceties of life, like milk and actual beds with mattresses, and you know, some of the goodies. So it'll be nice to go up there once in a while, and I think it's going to work out real good. It also helps from a strategic point of view, because we keep our airplanes separated that way so that Charlie, if he tried to mortar our aircraft, couldn't put us out of commission all at one time. So we're actually in pretty good shape here. Well, I see that my tape is finally running out again here, and I don't want to get caught running short this time, so I'll tell you goodbye early. Certainly appreciate the tapes and the letters, and I keep them coming. And thank you for the music, darling. I certainly appreciated that, too. And hope you can get some more for me, especially some two-track. That, of course, helps because these things run pretty well.